Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program Andrew Clark, who is CFO at C.H. Robinson. And today we're going to talk about distractions and disruptions in the logistics industry, how to thrive in an ever-changing world of supply chains. If you look at the logistics industry, there are so many factors that are converging upon it, whether it's, startups, mergers and acquisitions, regulations, technology changes, just a lot of different factors that you really logistics service providers, shippers, carriers, everyone in the ecosystem really have to keep a pulse on. And the question becomes, which of these trends of factors are truly important and things that are potentially disrupt the industry, and which ones are kind of mere distractions? And to share kind of his perspective, Andrew's making time to out of his busy schedule to be with us today, and obviously he's got a pulse on this, being in the forefront of the industry and talking with customers and living this every day. So certainly grateful to have Andy with us on the program today to kind of share his perspective on this topic. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Andy as we're having a conversation here, you can do so via the post a question comment, the question feature, and I'll keep an eye on it. And if it's a good and appropriate question, and we have time, I'll try to weave it into the conversation. So with that, Andy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. It's great to be here. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today.
Well, Andy, you're a first time guest on Talking Logistics. We certainly have had many of your colleagues on the program before, but like I always do whenever we bring someone new onto the program, I always like to get a little bit of a background in terms of how and why they got involved with the supply chain logistics industry to begin with. So why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics, and what your current role responsibilities are there at C.H. Robinson?
Absolutely. So I started in the logistics industry in 1998. I graduated with my MBA and was an investment banker on Wall Street. Worked for a company called Alex. And Alex. Brown, we were instrumental in taking a lot of logistics and transportation companies public throughout the 90s and early 2000s. And it always fascinated me, these clients of mine, both the ones in North America as well as globally. We had helped a number of US-based companies when they were looking to expand internationally, look at acquisition opportunities over there, and then vice versa. A lot of European companies were trying to figure out what logistics was in the United States, so we had helped them acquire companies in the US, and companies like DHL, Deutsche Post were clients of mine during that time. I then joined a great little company in Greenville, Tennessee called Forward Air. And I started with them in 2000 and became their CFO and was there from 2000 to 2006. Obviously, it's an interesting road feeder network that works on behalf of freight forwarders in North America. Did that for 6 years and then was called up to Cleveland, Ohio, where I ran Panther Expedited Services, an expedite and premium logistics company based in Cleveland and operations all across the U.S. and got into global forwarding. We sold that business in 2012 to Arkansas Best, where it's still a subsidiary of theirs. Over the last 2 years after that, I was a advisor and consultant to some of the largest global private equity firms and helping them assess kind of logistics, not only in North America, but across the globe as they were thinking about, where to make big bets and investments. And then a year ago, it was great timing. Was able to join C.H. Robinson, and I've known the team here at C.H. Robinson for nearly the entire time. So 1998, they were a client of Alex. Brown's, and so I've known the leadership team here for coming up on 18 years. And so when John had wanted to talk to me about becoming the CFO, I moved up here a year ago and couldn't be happier about the move.
That's fantastic. Very interesting, background and career path. Obviously, a lot has transpired in the industry since you got involved with it. Almost coming up now on 20 years here, it seems like.
Yeah.
And certainly, one of the things we're going to talk about is M&A. So I want to get to that in a little bit. And obviously, you've been very involved in a number of deals throughout your career here. So it'd be interesting to get your perspective on that. But let's start by again, discussing some of these factors that are converging on the logistics industry. And first, let's talk about the rise of new entrants, and whether it's Amazon getting more involved in logistics services, or certainly there's a lot of so-called Uber for trucking or Uber for transportation startups out there. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of new entrants into this market. I mean, are these disruptors? Are these distractions, or are these from your perspective, somewhere in between?
Well, let's put them in a couple of different categories, and Amazon being one in and of itself, right? So let's all remember in 19 or 2005, pardon me, Amazon started as an online bookseller, and it really wasn't that big. Today, it's $110 billion of revenue, and a market cap of $350 billion. So Amazon is a real player in any way, shape, or form. When they decide to do something, a lot of people take notice. And so obviously they've gotten into logistics with the deals with Atlas Air and ATSG, trying to figure out, and they're a customer of ours, and we love them. They're great. They're just trying to figure out, okay, how do we really gain a lot more understanding and knowledge and control over our supply chain and what we're actually trying to accomplish? Because guess what? They're not just selling books anymore. They're selling everything. And so they're a real player in this marketplace, and when they want to figure something out, they're going to figure it out. And I think we and others can be helpful in that regard. So putting Amazon in a category in and of themselves. But at the same time, we have other large retailers as well, Walmart, Target, Best Buy, where we're moving freight for them as well. And they're doing similar things where they're trying to figure out how supply chain patterns are in fact changing in the best way, in the most efficient way, in the most economical way to move freight to the end consumer, whether it's through brick and mortar or whether it is direct to consumer. So again, I think that's a trend that has taken place over many years, but obviously Amazon with their speed have accelerated that trend. And then when you talk about what I guess everybody's calling the Uber of trucking, I actually jokingly refer to it as the Tinder of trucking, just in terms of making these connections. Go back to 1998, 99, when I started as a banker. There were all these internet companies that were going to disrupt at that time. All these, like, you were just going to go click and you were going to get everything you possibly needed. And there were a lot of transportation companies that tried to catch that wave that are now no longer in existence. And so we've seen disruption take place in this industry for many years. And so we can dive into to talk about Uber for a little bit, and that they took on a regulated industry, right? They took on the taxi cab industry, which is heavily regulated. Well, transportation in the U.S. has been deregulated since 1980. So to a very large degree, I think what we and others have done have actually been the Ubers of trucking since 1980, right? It is deregulated. We've actually brought together disparate buyers and disparate sellers of freight. Now, there's a lot more complexity than you going out your front door, hailing an Uber or hailing a cab and going to the airport, right? Global supply chains have an increasingly complex level of sophistication where you need people, you need processes, and you need technology to solve that problem. We do not believe that a mobile app is going to solve the world's global supply chain problem. We do believe and are investing heavily in mobile technology to connect our independent contractors, independent owner-operators, and trucking companies into our system so that we have greater visibility and clarity as to what they're doing and allow them to interact and us to interact with our customers, again, on a global basis. And so, are we paying attention to what's happening in the industry? Absolutely, yes. Are we leading what's happening in the industry? Absolutely, yes. Are we concerned that a mobile-based or an app-based company that's raised $20 million is going to disrupt us? I don't say this arrogantly. We don't say it arrogantly, but we spend over $100 million a year in technology and connecting 110,000 shippers and 68, 70,000 disparate providers of transportation takes a lot more than just putting up a mobile app.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you provided some great food for thought there. I think we could probably spend the rest of the episode kind of diving into each of those points you brought out there. I completely agree with your point about Amazon and you know what's happening there, and kind of you know kind of that being kind of a separate, if you will, or a different trend happening in the industry versus kind of the more technology driven you know changes. You know, the way I see it, kind of maybe to summarize it a little bit, or maybe bring it to a higher level, is what I'm seeing across all industries. Obviously, you're seeing it in the retail industry, is where the consumer in the retail industry is becoming the center of the supply chain universe, and that's causing, whether it's Amazon and its retail partners and suppliers that feed into the B2C world, to really, you know, that's having a ripple effect on supply chain processes and technologies, right? When you put the end customer, and namely you and I, the consumer, at the center of the supply chain. And I think we're going to start seeing that in the B2B realm as well, where the customer, the end customer, is going to be the center of that universe versus, let's say, manufacturing in some industries that has always beat the drum to, you know, the supply chain. So I think that's having kind of a ripple effect in causing companies to take a step back and say, well, how do we need to transform our processes, our technology, our resources, our assets to align ourselves better to this new operating reality where the customer's at the center of the universe? Do you agree with that kind of view or
So,
perspective?
here's what I would say is that, you know, each of us living in a home and an apartment, and, you know, obviously Amazon and others are figuring out ways of trying to get what we want to us where we want to actually have it. Again, whether it's in a store or whether we want to have it delivered to us the same day, 2 days, 3 days, whatever, you know, they're trying to standardize and homogenize that experience. And that's fine. And to a large degree, that's what actually Uber did in the ride sharing. So it doesn't matter, Adrian, if you get into a car or I get in the car, we're the exact same, you know, if I'm going to extend the analogy, we're the same freight. And it doesn't matter whether you get into a Malibu or a Cruise or a Prius or a Corolla. Again, they've homogenized the shipper, pardon me, the carrier. Well, obviously, global supply chains are a lot more complex than that. And what Ford and GM want to do is going to be different than what John Deere wants to do. It's going to be different than Case New Holland and Pepsi and the like. And so if we ever reach a point where, and again, you're right, if that were ever to become homogenized, there's a lot more efficiencies that can be gained. But with all these independent B2B businesses, everybody's got their own supply chain, everybody's got their own processes, everybody's got their own practices. It's different than just simply dropping off a package on somebody's doorstep. Because somebody, you know, somebody's shift is 7 to 4, another company's shift is 8 to 5, and you know, somebody's running 3 shifts, somebody's working weekends. That's where we really just believe that it takes knowledge-based workers with a great system and great processes to help those customers manage the supply chain. We talk a lot about our proprietary platform called Navisphere, right? Navisphere is a global system. It was internally developed. We've spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on that piece of technology, but it allows us to track shipments on a global basis. So we now are managing Microsoft's global supply chain. So you have one of the world's leading technology companies that actually has the ability to do this on their own that said, you know what, we've scoured the globe, we've looked for other providers, we've, you know, analyzed this to the degree that you would expect a company of the caliber of Microsoft to analyze, and they concluded that our service through TMC was best able to help them manage their global supply chain. Because theirs is different than even Oracle, it's different than Cisco's. And so, you know, I agree with you that's what people are driving for. I just think there's a lot of nuances in there that are going to be very difficult for that to occur, at least in the immediate future.
Yeah, no, I think I generally agree with that as well. And you know, going back to your earlier point about the, you know, the dot-com days, you know, I get to talk to a lot of, you know, technology companies as well. And you know, my word of caution for them is always, you know, the logistics industry and transportation in particular is a very unique industry. And you know, you truly have to understand it. You know, and it's something that, you know, past attempts to revolutionize or to completely disrupt the industry have failed, because the folks that came at it purely from a technology standpoint. Back in 2000, it was the internet and web. Today might be more mobile apps. But unless you truly understand all the workings, whether it's regulations, whether it's the driver pool and what they want, whether it's, as you said, the unique aspects of whether you're delivering freight for a chemical company or you're delivering freight, last mile delivery for parcel. There's just a lot of diversity, out there and differences. So let's talk now, transition a little bit now to kind of an area that obviously you've had a role in for years, and that is kind of the mergers and acquisitions. I mean, there's been a lot of M&A activity over the past couple of years in particular. A lot of mega deals, and obviously C.H. Robinson has also made some acquisitions, as well. I mean, what is number one, what is driving, this activity? And from a shipper's perspective, I mean, is this a positive development or is there something, a cause for concern, or what questions should they be asking relative to this activity?
Great question. And we were on the forefront of it 20 years ago when European companies were looking to acquire into the United States because the U.S. logistics industry at that time and still today is probably a little bit behind in terms of the development of a 3PL. If you think about the number of shipments that are handled by 3PLs or brokers on the truckload side alone, it's only 30%. And now that number's been growing. But in Europe, it's obviously a much higher number, and China's even further behind in that regard. And so, what is driving it is, as you would imagine, as these large shippers have become more global, they look to have global visibility in terms of where their freight is. So, the end game, we believe, and I believe for this, is inventory management on a global basis. It's what, at the heart of what omni-channel distribution ultimately is where is all of our goods and products, and where can we get them most efficiently and most effectively to the consumer, whether it's a business or whether it's the end consumer themselves. And so as companies have, had the desire to grow and do that, now there are companies that have said, you know what, we're going to do X, and that's all we're going to do. We're going to be a truckload broker. We're going to be a truckload carrier. We're going to be an LTL carrier. And they have, as the saying goes, they've stuck to their knitting and they've been very successful in that regard. And other companies have said, we want to provide a wider range of services to our customers. We want to help them grow on a global basis, or even say within the United States, we want to help them grow across different services. So if we can provide, in our case, truckload services, and we're the largest truckload broker, we also wanted to be able to provide our customers less than truckload services. So we're the number one 3PL LTL as well. We believe that providing, and now this is where the tricky thing comes along, whether you do it organically or whether you do it acquisitions, customers, while they will express a willingness to buy multiple services, what they will ultimately hold you as a provider accountable for is providing best-in-class services across the board. So you can't say, well, we have a great truckload product and we have a less than great truckload LTL product, so you should use it for both. They're going to say, we will buy a bundled service provided that you have the best of each of those services. And we've done a lot of surveys with our customers, talked to thousands of them, and there is the desire for them. So again, everybody, if you look at the shippers and what they're doing, everybody's like, hey, we want to do more with less. And so they are outsourcing that logistics function to companies like C.H. Robinson. But they also want you to be able to provide a great service at the same or a lower price. In some cases, right, you'll find them willing to actually pay more, but that's the rare exception. In reality, what they're really trying to do is drive efficiencies out of their supply chain and drive the cost down. So mergers and acquisitions can be a very effective way of doing it. But, Adrian, it's a difficult business. I mean, there are many, many studies in this where the majority of transactions actually at the end of the day don't create a lot of value. So you have to think about things like strategy. You have to think about things like culture. You have to think about things like business model. So we're a non-asset-based provider. It allows us tremendous flexibility to talk to our customers and say, you know what? We can offer you the best solution regardless of the mode of transportation. We don't say, we can offer you the best solution provided it fits into our network, provided it fits into our assets that we own over here, because we don't own those assets. So, and then finally, financially, right? So you'd mentioned what's another reason why companies have been driven to grow via acquisition is because organic growth over the last 8 years has been challenging. It's that, the economy just hasn't grown coming out of an economic shock. It hasn't grown to the degree that anybody has expected. And as a result, interest rates are really at all time and historic lows. So if it doesn't cost you a lot to borrow money, the returns that you have to generate in a low growth environment aren't really that high. So you go out and buy your growth and you go out and acquire companies that will help you do that. But if you don't integrate and you don't offer a great solution, customers are really, really, really smart. They'll see right through it and they'll use you for the services that you're good at, but they'll also not use you for the services that you aren't, regardless of whether or not you own that. And, you'd mentioned, we have done acquisitions. We've spent in the last 3 years, 3.5 years, roughly $1 billion. So Global Forwarding was our first large acquisition, and we acquired a company called Phoenix International based in Chicago. But we're the number one NVO from China to the U.S. We're the number two NVO from Asia to the U.S. And why is that important? Well, a lot of our customers are, over the last several years, have been moving stuff from China to the U.S. I mean, even though that market has slowed, it's still a big market. And so for us to be able to go and offer more services credibly to our customers, we knew we had to buy the best player and integrate that best player in the space. And so now if you think about Global Forwarding as part of our network, it's nearly 20% of our net revenue. And that number has continued to grow. So we're able to credibly offer that solution and service to our customers. And then, a year ago, we bought a great, and let's go back to technology. Freightquote was founded in 1999, and Freightquote was originally designed to be an internet board for LTL shipments. And they still do that. It's a very effective way for infrequent small and micro shippers to be able to transact with us. We're able to capture and attract those customers via the web, but we still transact with the same carriers that we've always used, and it helped us to grow that segment. Again, strategy is important, cultural fit's important. The business model, they're a technology-enabled 3PL that's based in Kansas City. And all those things, and the purchase price. I mean, we were able to get all four things, and then integrate that effectively over the last several years. But of course, as you know, there are many examples of where M&A has not added value. And one, look no further than roll-ups have never created long-term value for customers or shareholders. And, the examples in Europe are rife with companies that just had a desire to be big, but not good.
Right. I think that's a great point. I mean, I remember when I first started in the industry and I was doing some research on the 3PL market and I was interviewing shippers. And one of the common comments that I would hear is, my best service provider here in the U.S. is my worst one in Europe, or my best one in Europe is my worst one here in the U.S. And so on and on. That was kind of a common thread in the conversation, but I think underscores your point that the value of this from a shipper's perspective is that if you are going to do be able to provide this breadth of services and capabilities, that you've got to provide a level of service and excellence across the entire footprint, if you will, of what you're offering. Otherwise, shippers are going to, pick and choose providers based on what they're, best at, and not choose services that are not as strong. I think the other thing that you kind of touched upon a little bit, which, last year I was talking about how I saw the 3PL market becoming barbell shaped. Meaning, at one end of the barbell, you're seeing, 3PLs either through mergers and acquisitions or through, organic growth, partnerships, so on and so forth, kind of, becoming more global, providing more services, really scale, right, was kind of the key operating word there in terms of being able to meet the requirements that customers are putting on them from a global perspective. And then at the other end of the barbell, you've got, much more niche providers, very hyper focused on a particular segment of the market and going deep there. And kind of the middle of the market, was kind of a dangerous place to be or an uncomfortable place to be. I mean, do you see kind of that barbell shaped trend happening in the industry? Do you agree with that kind of perspective?
I think that's right. I do. It's, there are about 16,000 truckload brokers in North America, right? So if you have a relationship from, with a couple of customers in a particular geography, where you're effective and they want to deal with you, that's great. And you know the truckers and, you know, are on call 24/7 and can handle that. Yeah, absolutely. There's always going to be that. Although, and we'll talk about it at some point, the regulatory environment, even though I had mentioned we deregulated in 1980, the last 8 years have seen a plethora of re-regulation within this industry, which is going to present a challenge. And so how do you overcome that challenge? You have to have a certain size and a certain scale. And like anything, you do not want to be stuck in no man's land. You don't want to be stuck where you're getting beat to the punch by the nimble niche players, and yet you don't have the size and the scale to compete with some of these bigger players. But even on those bigger player side, you know, you're seeing a lot of maybe, I don't want to say dismantling, but reconsideration of, hey, do all these pieces fit together? Is this organization, and you know, the articles are out there in some of the trade rags on, you know, some of these European providers saying, do we actually need to own all these assets? Is it efficient for us to own these assets? And I would argue that our experience, meaning specific to C.H. Robinson, is that you really do need to integrate. You do need to be on one operating platform, because the value of saying, I can show you and move your shipments and move your inventory across the globe, but you have to deal with multiple different parties, is not a really good value add. Customers don't want to do that. Customers don't want to navigate your internal dynamic to get their freight moved. They want you to solve their problems for them, and they'll pay you to do it. But if you're not going to integrate and you don't have a very clear go-to-market strategy in that regard, I just don't see that, and we don't see that there's long-term success in being big just to be big. If you're going to build scale, you better be ready to take advantage of the scale that you've built.
Yeah, you just reminded me there of another, you know, common complaint that I would hear historically, particularly through some of these mergers and acquisitions, where, you know, customers would end up getting, you know, 3, 4, 5 different invoices, you know, from the customer, because depending on, you know, they weren't able to get a consolidated, you know, view of forget about inventory and where the transport, you know, where's my shipment, where's my inventory, even just how much am I spending with you, Mr. Service Provider, yeah, became complex, because, you know, if they were working with the freight forwarding division, they would get an invoice from them. If they were working with, you know, the contract logistics, they would get an invoice from them. So even just that lack of integration internally, even from a invoicing and payment, you know, perspective, I think is one of those, you know, symptoms of poor integration. Let's shift over now to, you know, you mentioned regulation. So why don't we talk about that as well? Because that's another one of these factors that is impacting, converging upon, you know, the logistics industry. I mean, whether it's regulations related to trucking or customs compliance, I mean, certainly having an impact. I mean, which regulations or changes should shippers, you know, really keep a pulse on? And what are, you know, some of the near-term and long-term implications?
Well, I would tell you all of them. I mean, because it seems like every week something new comes out and it's like, oh, this will be implemented in 6 months. And I mean, you know, and when you ask the authorities, well, how are you going to do X, Y, and Z? They don't have an answer. And these are not like, hey, we really peeled back the layer, you know, multiple times and you know, we're 6 months into this. These are really simple, basic questions that they don't have an answer to. You know, such as on the trucking side in the U.S., the ELDs, electronic logging devices. So today, the majority of the carriers that are out there do not have electronic logging devices. They'll be required to do that. It doesn't change the hour of service. It just simply changes the manner in which you're going to prove that you're running legally. So then the question is, well, I don't know, is there somewhere in the Ethernet, in the interweb, that they're going to send all this information to, that somebody's going to monitor it? Or is it still going to be regulated by the State Department of Transportation's authorities, where if you're in, say, Minnesota, and you get pulled over at a weigh station or random, and they're going to say, show us your electronic logging device, and it's no different than showing us your logbook. It will cause a ripple in the supply chain, because the difference is, when does that clock actually start? So today I could move, let's say I'm a mile away or 2 miles away from picking up my freight, and I just simply go over there and I don't start my clock because I just moved a mile and I'm waiting to be loaded, and I start my hours on my paper log when I pull out of the shipper. Well, today, if I'm an hour or from a mile away, the moment I start moving that truck under an ELD, my clock is going to start. And if it takes me 3 hours to get loaded and it's a 10-hour transit, I'm not going to have the time to make it to that consignee. And I think shippers are, I don't think anybody's kind of fully thinking about the impact that it's going to have, because everybody's like, well, you know, I think the knock is all these small independent businessmen and women, the... Sorry about that. My screen froze up, but all these small independent businessmen and women are running illegally. And we just, you know, we don't have any way of actually verifying that one way or the other. But we do understand that they're out there to drive safe, be professional, and earn a living. And I think the supply chain impact of ELDs is going to be different than what people think. It's not just going to take people that are running illegally off the road, which, by the way, they should. But it's going to change the way in which shippers have to think about how they're loading and unloading carriers. And that's going to have an impact. Solus, you know, again, how do you, you know, providing the weight for these container ships or the containers that put on ships to go over, you know, seas to that, you know, they're putting in these new rules and regulations without having given a lot of thought to the impact of a supply chain. And when it happens, just like changing the hours of service, there is a rather large whipsaw that takes place, and then they're faced with the reality of, well, maybe that regulation had a lot of not only intended but unintended consequences that we didn't think about. And so I think as we've been out there talking to our shippers, is that what is helpful is to have people that are trading in this area every day, right? So we're moving roughly 65,000 shipments rather in North America and across the globe every day. Unless you're going to resource up, meaning bring in people that know the regulations and know how to navigate through them, you're probably best to partner up with a third party logistics provider that can help you navigate that situation.
Yeah, I know. Certainly when I talk to shippers, you know, you brought up the two, you know, regulations or two things that, you know, certainly there's a lot of questions and uncertainty around, and that is ELDs and SOLAS. We got a question here from Charlie Tomlin, who I'm going to just put up on the screen here and read, because I think it's related to what you just talked about. So in respect to the E-Log mandate, you know, you talked a little bit about kind of the potential unintended consequences there. I mean, do you see smaller trucking companies or owner operators being compliant, or will they sign on with larger carriers who have been compliant for a while, or will they leave the workforce, thus exacerbating the driver shortage? So I think those are all kind of some of the discussions and a lot of questions that people have. And I think, I mean, from my perspective, is we really don't know. But what's your take on it?
So I would say that there are a number of people that are out there that are, you know, 6 months ago that said, hey, this is probably going to be like a 15% impact on capacity, and now it's been whittled down to 8, and now I've seen numbers like 3 to 5%. So yes, we do believe it will have an impact on productivity. But when you go back to my earlier statement of, well, how are they going to actually monitor the hours of service, unless they're changing the manner in which they monitor the hours of service, i.e. roadside, you know, way stations and randoms, that it's not going to change it. And unfortunately, you know, as we all know, even companies that have, and you can go on CSA right now, even companies that have electronic logging have hours of service violation. So simply having, there's no kill switch on the electronic logs that as soon as you hit 11 hours in 1 second, the truck shuts down and pulls to the side of the road. So there will still be, because there have been, hours of service violation. When you ask the question of, well, does that get tagged to the actual trucking company, or does it get tagged to the driver? You still don't have an answer on that. And so the compliance will eventually take place over time, because I think it'll be easier for them to regulate how they're being compliant. Will it cause people to leave the industry? I would tell you that, a lot of people don't know this, but for about 8 years, I had a commercial driver's license. And the challenge of getting a commercial driver's license increases, you know, every year. So it's more difficult to recruit and attract and retain drivers into the industry. I don't think whether you're running for a large carrier or a small carrier that it's actually not any better, because you still have to drive the truck. So will capacity leave? Probably in some way, shape, or form, to the degree to which I don't think anybody knows. But what that'll do is, like we've all taken a macroeconomics class, as soon as supply comes out, prices go up. And when prices go up, supply comes back in. So that is ultimately what is going to happen in this environment, is prices will go up. And we show our customers, we show our investors, quite frankly, charts over the last 10 years. Over the last 10 years, pricing on the North American surface trans truckload pricing has been up on average. Now, there's variability within that, but on average, 2.5%. So pricing to our shippers has been up 2.5% over the last nearly decade. Well, pricing to carriers has been up as well, that same amount, approximately 2.5% during that same time period. So pricing will continue to go up. We happen to be in an environment over the last couple of quarters where pricing is down because there's a bit of a glut of capacity, but pricing at some point will go back up.
Yep. Well, you know, great. Charlie, thank you for your question. Again, I think a lot, you know, this is something that's going to have to be like shippers and carriers and logistics service providers all have to keep a pulse on and stay on top of, you know, to successfully navigate whether it's ELD or SOLAS or the kind of all the other regulations, including hours of service, which after all these years still remains kind of an unsettled topic, if you will. So, you know, we're kind of running short on time here. So I just want to get quickly to just a few more questions. So again, we talked about a lot of different factors here. You know, so in light of all these things that we talked about, I mean, what new capabilities and value propositions are customers, you know, in your discussions with them? I mean, what are they expecting from the 3PL, you know, partners today?
You know, it's interesting in that regard. And so we have relationships and many different types of relationships with our customers. And it goes all the way from what is, you know, spot market, right? So, hey, we need a truck. We want to pay the lowest possible price. And we understand that's part of the game. And then it goes all the way up the scale to a complete outsource, whether it's on a global basis with Microsoft or, you know, roughly 13, 14% of our revenue comes from where customers have said the complexities of supply chain, the complexities of managing disparate truckloads, complexities of all these things that you guys are and ladies at C.H. Robinson are capable of doing are such that we would rather have you do it. Now, we provide them with a lot of insight into visibility as to what's going on. So in that regard, I think customers are really looking to people like us to be thought leaders, to help guide them through the regulatory, the legislative. We have people on, you know, government affairs in our company that help us kind of navigate the hill to figure out what's coming down from, you know, from Washington to help us be thoughtful to our customers. And we do that across the globe to help them manage the disruptions that are inherent in any supply chain. And so the greater visibility that we're able to provide to them, and it gets down to that inventory management, that order level of information, where omnichannel is obviously a buzzword within the retail industry, but it's really it goes across industries. People want to know where all their inventory is. People want to know where all of their, you know, products and parts are. And your ability to not only tell them that, help them get them to where they need to be at the time in which they need to be there, is the value add that I would tell you if you're a global shipper, you've got to do that. And if you're just, you know, but at the same time, if you got an LTL shipment a week or a truckload shipment a week, you're probably not looking for that. And so I think what we've tried to do is carve out across, you know, as we segment our customers from those small and micro shippers to the global shippers, knowing the different services that each of them require and our ability to transact where and when and how they want us to transact, I think is part of the value add.
Yeah, no, great, you know, great points there. I mean, I think I've always said that, you know, the more enlightened shippers are the ones that are looking at their service, logistics service providers and their partners as less about providing transportation and warehousing services, but really looking at them even from a risk management partner, right? So you're in the risk. I tell 3PLs, you know, you should be talking about that you're in the risk management business, because you're the ones that, you know, disruptions are always going to happen in some way or form in the supply chain, whether it's, you know, a strike, whether it's weather related, whether it's demand exceeding supply, whatever the case might be. And ultimately, they have to rely on their partners to help navigate these disruptions as quickly as possible, as cost effectively as possible, and ideally, do so faster than their competition can, respond to these disruptions. And so I always tell folks, think of your 3PLs as your risk management, partner. So that leads me to my next and second to last question, which is, based on your experience, working with companies in many industries, I mean, what are how are leading companies, positioning themselves for success and, as their supply chains continue to, become more dynamic, global, and complex?
I would tell you, when we have thousands, probably tens of thousands of conversations, globally, with our customers, and it goes up and down the spectrum because, the ones that we think are on the leading edge are the ones that are thinking about it from a very holistic perspective. And if it's about optimizing to the lowest price on any given day, that may serve you over the short term when we're in a situation like we've been in, say, the last couple of quarters, versus let's think about the total cost of moving products, of actually having products across the globe. And those leading companies kind of are able to calculate because they've got the systems and they've partnered with people that give them the information as to what it costs, not just to move it, but to store it, and what it costs to not have a product on the shelves when a customer wants it, or not have the cost or the product in a network when a disruption happens. I mean, these are the type of things that, quite frankly, and you mentioned it well, these are conversations that are taking place in the boardroom. Every day you'll read stories about, and there was one on an engine manufacturer that was in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week. They can't build engines. They can't build engines because they can't get parts. And so, these are things that people, true supply chain professionals and logisticians are thinking about: how do I get product sourced effectively, efficiently, and in a very consistent manner, so that I can build the things that my customers want me to build? Because there are real penalties in that world about not delivering a product. So that I think is, and you never know it until it comes upon you and you're like, okay, now I really need to have that conversation. And we would argue that you should be having that conversation before. It's like, when did Noah build the ark? Before it rained. So, that's our advice too, and that's what we're seeing with some of our leading customers.
Yeah, that's a great point there, and examples. I mean, to me, I guess to kind of summarize that point, I mean, it's really truly taking a holistic perspective, right? So taking a more integrated view of not just transportation, not just inventory management, not just procurement and sourcing, but really, looking at it very holistically and not just focusing on cost and lead time, but also the risk side as well, which I think that the risk equation. Or the risk conversation historically has not taken place as often as it should. Andy, we're kind of out of time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question here. I mean, as a way to wrap up, I mean, what question should, shippers ask themselves today, to assess whether they're, well positioned to, again, thrive in this ever-changing supply chain world?
Yeah, it's what's the saying? I mean, you better have people in your organization thinking about how you're going to be dismantled because your competitors are. And so I would argue that the best shippers that are out there that are thinking about, well, what are the gaps, what are the holes in my supply chain right now, and what could they be if X, Y, and Z happen? I mean, it doesn't have to go so far as to be a black swan event, but I mean, flooding in Thailand shuts down, microchip manufacturers, and so, which has a huge impact on like automotive companies, right? And if you think about the impact that it has and the consequences that it has, are you willing to essentially bear the cost of that event occurring? And if you are, fine, just recognize it and move on. But again, global shippers and leading global companies, I don't think can afford to do that. I don't think that their boards of directors are going to allow them to have unmitigated risk in their supply chain. It's just, it happens every day, and you're going to show up on the Wall Street Journal that your company's not able to deliver parts. And so the conversations that we have are really geared around that. We think of ourselves, really as knowledge-based workers and as a business process outsource. I mean, we have done, I think, a really good job of helping companies get comfortable with outsourcing that logistics function because it is complex, because it is global, and because the cost of error is pretty high.
Great, great point. I'm just going to end here with a comment that was put forth by one of our viewers here, since he took the time to put it up there, because we were talking about risk management. So I'm just going to read it real quick. Speaking of risk management, as a compliance manager with 20 years in the industry, it's amazing to me how little shippers and know about the, you know, different kind of enforcement agencies and different compliance regulations and so forth that, you know, that are out there. And I think that's particularly true. I still remember going to a conference a couple of years ago where these were very large multinational companies and their compliance people were presenting, and they were kind of fretting the situation that they had, and they had very little technology to manage their compliance operations. They were basically relying on Excel spreadsheets. And again, these are multi-billion dollar companies that are relying on spreadsheets to manage their customs compliance and some of the other activities. So a lot of work that still needs to be done in that area. So Dennis, thank you for your comment.
It's still out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Andy, like I always say at the end of all our conversations, we could probably spend, you know, hours talking about each of these different topics, and we always just manage to scratch the surface. But I think we provide a lot of great, you know, food for thought and you know, hopefully spark some further conversations down the road. So I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Adrian. I enjoyed the conversation.
Great. I want to thank those of you that joined us live today and asked questions and submitted comments. If you're watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for Andy, you can post it on, you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com and post your question or comment there. And I'm sure Andy will be more than happy to follow up via that medium. Again, thank you all for joining us today and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.
Thank you.